I want to thank our many readers this morning. Our local Pentecost experience heard not only English, but French, German, Greek, Spanish, Turkish, and Norwegian. So that cacophony would have been understandable if we had ears to hear. Traditional Christianity has affirmed a Trinitarian faith that somehow God is three in one, the Creator, Parent, Christ as the begotten child, and the Holy Spirit. And this third, shall we say, traditionally, person of the Trinity, the Holy Spirit, is the one about whom the least theology has been written, around whom the fewest boundaries seem to be drawn. It seems that theologians, by the time they get to the third person of the Trinity, have run out of steam. Or, I think rather, they have the good sense not to try to cage in something as radically free as the Holy Spirit has always seemed to be. And it's because of that freedom of the Holy Spirit that blows doors wide open and sets people's hair on fire. Because of that freedom, it can be a little messy, and it can make some of us a little bit nervous. This morning we hear that famous story of the coming of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost, where the Spirit is described as wind and as flame. Elsewhere we hear descriptions of the Spirit described as water and as breath. And this presence of the Spirit always seems to be described as something primal or elemental, always a little bit beyond our understanding, a little bit beyond our grasp and our control, or if we try to control it, we do so at our peril. That experience of the Spirit reminds us that God can't be pinned down or penned in. Some of you may recall in the Gospel according to John, in the first post-resurrection experience of Jesus, where he appears behind closed doors to gathered disciples, it's the appearance where Thomas wasn't there and therefore doubted. The risen Christ comes and breathes upon them, saying, "Receive the Holy Spirit." This scene from Acts is a dramatically different story of the arrival of the Holy Spirit, where it comes in this noisy, confusing, very public way. Last week, if you were here or in another church that observes the cycle of Christian holidays, you heard about the Ascension, that story of Jesus' farewell scene, where he's taken up or withdraws into heaven, which creates a kind of absence, a prelude. It makes an empty space, which creates in some ways this precondition that's necessary for the promised filling by the Holy Spirit. So today we hear arguably the most well-known passage from the entire book of Acts, that chronicle of the early Christian movement. Hear how it is that, as earlier was promised by Jesus, even in his absence after his departure, his followers would not be left alone. This is the fulfillment of the promise, "I will be with you always." There's this ongoing, sustaining presence of the Spirit. And this moment, this event at Pentecost, was so decisive and transformational that it is called the birthday of the church. So, happy birthday, church. Happy birthday, church. Here and around the world. Happy birthday, church. At this so-called birth of the church, our Christian observance of Pentecost too easily forgets the Jewish roots of Pentecost, but they would not have been forgotten on that first audience and those who first experienced it. Jews had again gathered in Jerusalem for a festival of the Jewish Pentecost. It was the culmination of Shavuot, the feast festival of weeks, an ancient Jewish harvest festival, a celebration of God's care and abundance symbolized by the harvest. And it was also when the faithful Jewish people would celebrate the giving of the law at Sinai, because their tradition had placed the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai to Moses and the people of Israel after they had escaped and left Egypt, the giving of the law 50 days after Passover. So 50, pente for 50, like 5 in pentagram, 50 days after Passover. This giving of the Torah at Pentecost, a unique bond of love and promise between God and people of God's choosing for a blessing. Just like we remember that the Passover meal was already a deeply meaningful meal as it became the Last Supper, Pentecost was already a meaningful celebration of the outpouring of God's love and presence and promise, and it was about to take a remarkable leap forward. So the story goes that on Pentecost, the disciples, as were many Jews in Jerusalem, were gathered. Now Jesus was gone. They had seen Jesus disappear. Who knows what they were thinking when they were gathered together, probably thinking about the meaning of Pentecost that they had known. Maybe they were still making sense of what had happened, the crucifixion, resurrection, and afterwards. But we know they were gathered privately, inside, behind closed doors, and suddenly breaks in this some kind of heavenly presence, sounded like rushing wind, looked like flames, tongues of flame upon their heads. And they rush outside. Well, wouldn't you if you saw flames suddenly appear above your head? They rush outside, and as we hear in the Catalog of Nations, if you want to read it, it's printed in the bulletin. You did hear it in many languages. This Catalog of Nations tells us that peoples, Jews from all over their known world, a representative list, were in Jerusalem. And in front of all of these strangers, Galilean Jews, who were considered rural hicks with notoriously bad accents, were speaking in languages that they didn't know, but somehow in the languages that others understood. Then before Peter launches into what is arguably the first evangelical sermon, there's one of the best comic moments in the Bible. People in the crowd say they are filled with new wine. Because the only explanation for what they saw happening was that these disciples have got to be drunk. They are filled with new wine. Right after the passage that we hear, Peter says, "No, we are not drunk. It's too early in the day for that." I mean, really, that's what the story says. And then he launches into his sermon. I have always not only been amused by that phrase, "They are filled with new wine," but I am intrigued by that observation of the crowd that Pentecost day, that they are filled with new wine. They may not have been drunk, but I think on that Pentecost day, they did get a taste of new wine. You might recall in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, after one of many of the difficult exchanges Jesus had with religious authorities, he makes a comment that one puts new wine in new wine skins. You don't put new wine in old skins. That was before wine was fermented in bottles and casks as much. The old skin would harden during the fermentation process, and new wine, as it was still fermenting, would burst a hard, rigid skin, whereas a new skin was still flexible enough to grow with that growing, living, fermenting new wine. New wine skins, not new wine in old skins. So the analogy would have been crystal clear to those hearing it. The message and example that he was proclaiming was just a little bit too uncomfortable for the establishment. The containers of the past weren't going to hold it. They would be unable to receive it in many ways, the old wineskins. He wasn't even aiming for them. He was aiming for new wineskins, a new crowd that was ready and willing and able to receive it. On Pentecost, even though those gathered followers were not drunk on alcohol, I think they were under the influence of this new wine. The pastor has two confessions to make in the pulpit this morning. First, even though I live in Portland and I occasionally enjoy a beer, I know this is the opening of Beer Fest, I do have a preference for wine, so please don't drive me out of Portland because of my preference for wine over beer. My second confession is that on some occasions I have actually had too much wine. No one in this room has ever had that experience. No, that was not it. That's water. That is water. Oh my gosh. I didn't even plan that. Okay, we'll just take up the offering and go home now. Okay. That's water. You are willing to test it yourself. Yes, on occasion I have had too much wine, and it, in the moment, is not an altogether unpleasant experience until the next morning, of course. So having had that personal experience, when I look at this Pentecost story, I understand why the disciples were thought to be drunk, because there are some interesting similarities between this infilling of the Holy Spirit and what appears as drunkenness. But let me be very clear up front. I'm not going to glamorize drinking or drinking to excess in any way, particularly in a community and our community, so many are plagued by addiction and self-medicating. The disciples weren't drunk. But if we know drunkenness, we know what it looks like. It is somehow without the alcohol, but with the taste of this new wine of the Spirit, their inhibitions were lowered. Have you ever found yourself, when your inhibitions were lowered, saying or doing something you wouldn't ever do otherwise? Under the influence. What would happen if we found ourselves saying and doing things under the influence of the Spirit of God? Where would we go? Who would we talk to? What would we tell them under that influence? I want to make a few quick observations about the Pentecost story. So many of our spiritual experiences are solitary. So I think it's really helpful to notice that here, the arrival of the Holy Spirit, this new wine, shows up not as a private or hidden thing. It begins and it ends in community. It comes upon a community already gathered. It's accompanied by dazzling effects, yes. It draws public attention. It blew the doors open. There is no more meeting behind closed closet doors under this influence. So the first observation is the presence of this Spirit empowers and emboldens. And we know under the influence, that strength, that emboldenedness comes from somewhere else. We know it is beyond us. Here it is the working of God's Spirit that emboldens. So not only does it empower and embolden, it establishes a community, a real community. Peter finishes his sermon about a dozen verses beyond where our reading ends. And it goes on to say that the hearers were so convinced and convicted that 3,000 were baptized that day. That's a good day. That's a good day. With people from this litany of nations, the church was born multicultural. We have this illusion that everyone thought and believed and acted the same way at the very beginning. This is just a clue that they didn't even necessarily know how to talk to one another, and they were all part of the same community. They didn't speak the same language. They didn't agree on everything. They didn't necessarily even like one another. Difference and diversity are the DNA of our movement. People calling one another sister and brother that may never have imagined sitting next to one another, let alone loving one another. You have got to be under the influence of something bigger than what anyone possesses alone for that to happen. That's the work of the Spirit of God. It empowers, it establishes community. And Peter later points out, as he quotes from the Jewish prophet Joel, this outpouring of the Spirit on the whole world, on all flesh, is a fulfillment of what God has always promised. That God has promised this blessing for everyone and not just for a few. You know, during the ministry of Jesus, the disciples all the time, over and over again, are described as not quite getting it. A little dull, a little slow, we might say. There's something about this movement of the Holy Spirit that didn't just empower, it didn't just create a community, it didn't just fulfill what God had promised. Under the influence of this new wine, these disciples who were mistaken as drunk, something happened that doesn't actually happen very often under the influence of other spirits. There was enlightenment and understanding. Enlightenment and understanding. It's made so striking because of this description of all of these different languages spoken and heard and understood because of this new wine. Not just for the first followers, but for us, understanding who we really are. This month, I will actually have been the pastor of MCC Portland for 6 years. And I remember when I came to candidate in March or April of 2008, and there were a number of meetings I had with small and large groups of people. And while I was thinking about this sermon, I recalled one of the more interesting questions that I was asked in my candidacy forum. And someone asked me if I would be going out to any bars or clubs. And I said, well, probably. I'm a single gay man, and there are occasions where I would like to have an opportunity to go out and meet someone and have a date, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I could tell from their expression that that was not the right answer for them. I have no idea really what was going on. I know that there was certainly a lot of history behind that question. I imagine that they had had experiences of perhaps other pastors or religious leaders who they heard things about in those sorts of settings. Perhaps they expected a certain decorum that a pastor would not have, therefore he wouldn't be seen at a gay bar. I can more than occasionally be seen at the local lounge on Mount, that was a free plug for the local lounge. My promise to this church and to myself is that I would never do anything to embarrass myself or this church in public. Hopefully never in private either. But yes, thank you. Haley agrees. Haley agrees. Haley agrees. But I am as fully human as everybody else in this room. So it occurs to me in the context of this story where the disciples were thought drunk, I imagine that those first disciples were experienced as being a bit of an embarrassment. Thought to be publicly drunk. Now, they were not publicly drunk, but I wonder, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, were they still just a little bit embarrassing to some others? So that leads me to think, if we find ourselves sitting quietly assembled behind closed doors, because that's what we're accustomed to, that's what we're familiar with, that's what's expected, that's what's safe, and that's secure. Well, it's Pentecost. The fire is kindling, the wind is stirring, and it's time to crack open a bottle of new wine. Under the influence of the new wine of the Spirit, we will find ourselves doing things we'd never do, speaking to people we would never talk to, saying things we can't imagine we could bring ourselves to say. Now as then, the world might never be the same. Please pray with me.